Welcome to Attached, a platform for adding breadth and depth to everyday living. I'm Yaakov Danishevsky, and this is the conversation series focused on my book. In each episode, I invite a special guest to discuss the topic of a particular chapter and how it relates to our lives. Welcome to another Conversations episode. Today we'll be discussing the seventh chapter of the book, which is the chapter about love languages. I'm joined today by Aliza Tropper, who I'm very excited to have this conversation with. She is a therapist in private practice in New York City and in the New York area, and someone I've just been getting to meet and discuss ideas with, and it's really been a pleasure, and thank you for making the time to do this.
I'm really excited to be here.
So the quick summary of this chapter as our springboard for the topic is that in this chapter, I talk about the classic idea of the love languages. Most people are familiar with this book, the book about love languages, that essentially the idea being that each individual needs to know their love language. There are five basic categories of languages. Essentially, the idea being that there are five different ways that a person feels loved, that they are able to receive that love, that it kind of hits home for them. And that it's so important for us to each know our own and to communicate that to those around us, in particular to our spouse. And that's kind of the classic idea in a nutshell. What I do in this chapter is I take that and I translate that into the variety of mitzvos that Judaism, the variety of rituals and observances that Judaism has for us in terms of our relationship with God, with Hashem, and how those mitzvos, those acts can be seen as different types of love languages between us and Hashem. And so without going more into what I read about there specifically, curious for you to just start off by sharing any reflections you had on this topic or on this chapter.
Yeah. What I love so much about this chapter was it really took, it really made us see a way that we could connect, you know, spiritually with, you know, God and Hashem. And it really like showed this new angle, which I think so many people sometimes struggle with, you know, connecting. How do I connect with Judaism? How do I connect with Hashem? And I think here really gave insight in ways that that everyone could really find a way to connect. But so that was something that I really found fascinating. But even just going back to, you know, this is based on Chapman's love languages. Like I think, just even reminding ourselves, like, you know, we all know that a lot of us know about the five love languages. But I think that sometimes you don't realize that there are certain ways to do it, or there are certain nuances that are a part of each one. So I also did find that, like, that made me think about, okay, what do these each really mean? Like, we know acts of service, you know, mean doing things for your spouse, doing things for your partner. But why is it sometimes that it doesn't work? So I think we can maybe talk a little bit about that and then talk about the spiritual love languages, whatever. However, yeah. I guess this conversation takes us.
Yeah, please. So let me just list for those who don't know the five languages that Chapman has in his book. And I'd love for you to kind of expound on any one of them in terms of what you're referring to of like appreciating the nuances or what we might not recognize about each of those languages. So the five in no particular order are words of affirmation, meaning expressing praise, expressing compliments, expressing affection verbally. The second is quality time. The third is acts of service. The fourth is gifts. And the fifth is physical touch. So yeah, I'd love to hear any one of those, you know, okay, adding to it.
I guess we could start with even just thinking about like words of affirmation. That one is definitely a big one for me. So, you know, when you think about, okay, you think about complimenting your partner, showing appreciation, but you don't also realize that a lot of times it's about also encouragement. Encouraging them to do things. And particularly for this love language, it's very important to cheerlead your partner on, let them know what you think about them, let them know their potential. Or even just the tone of your voice is very, very important. Speaking kind words, gentle words, humble words, nagging. People in this love language are very sensitive. Everyone has all these love languages. They're all important, but it's about what's most important to us. So specifically people who are, this one's very important, the tone of voice, is very important. Nagging, to get your partner to do something is really going to push them the other way. Or criticizing, saying something like, "You never make that pasta," as opposed to, "I love when you make that pasta. It's my favorite dish." So just the small, these small nuances really, really make a difference.
So I never,
So
so sorry, just to interject for a second, I never thought about this the way that you're, the way that I think you're framing it, which is really cool. That if you understand the person's love language, then that also gives you a kind of a clue into what things they'll be more sensitive to negatively. So if
yeah.
their love, if their positive love language is words of affirmation, what you're saying is that that's also gives you insight into they will be more affected by words. So
Yes,
they're
exactly.
more sensitive to that. I never heard it put in that way. That's really, really powerful.
And the way that they're going to connect a lot is through words. So liking to talk. So that's something that, communicating. And then if something doesn't go right for you, communicating in a way that is gentle. I really would like if you can help around the house, as opposed to you never help around the house. So yeah, this is all, that's all part of it, which I, thought was really interesting. I can go through each one, or, I don't know how much time we have.
Yeah, I mean,
But
also just to highlight something you said. I mean, in terms of the words of affirmation and thinking about encouragement in that way, that's I like that. That's also another piece of the words of affirmation. I don't think is so much what people usually think of when they think of words of affirmation.
Yeah, right. Which is why I brought that up. I thought that was interesting. And another thing, even with like gifts, right? So what's gifts about? That's also, I guess I'm picking the ones that are big on my list. But gifts, a lot is about, it's a people who appreciate gifts, it's a lot about that this thing is a symbol of love. So to them, physical things that basically symbol some sort of appreciate, some sort of symbol of love is very important. So even in times of crisis, this is something that people don't realize, that having your partner physically being there is a symbol of love. So to them, that is very important. Like as opposed to, I remember in Chapman's book, he was saying something how someone was going through a crisis in a hospital, and like 10 minutes after, their husband went to then go play, maybe it was softball or football. And the wife is very sensitive to that. Like, how could you go do this when I'm in crisis? But really, he had spent a long time there. And then it was like there wasn't that much time he could spend there. They had to go do things, tests and run tests. But to her, the physical act of her husband being there symbolized love. So that's why it's very much about these physical symbols, whether it doesn't have to necessarily be big and expensive. But it's about the thought that you're putting into it, that this shows me that I have been thinking about you, care about you, or love you. So that also I found interesting, that people don't often think that. And a lot of times, if you physically can't be there, it's okay, whatever. But yeah, that also was a little nuance that I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Any of the other ones have any nuances that you think would often be overlooked that you think are worth highlighting?
Yeah, I think with acts of service, sometimes people don't realize that it's actually about the things that are important to my spouse. So there is sometimes you can have the same even love language as your partner, and you could both have acts of service as your number one love language and dialect, but you're both not doing the services that they would actually appreciate, right? So if like my husband would spend the whole Sunday, I don't know, cleaning my car, to me, I wouldn't necessarily see that as acts of service, even though acts of service for me, let's say it was my love language. So I think also that, like, realizing that acts of service doesn't mean any services. It's very, it's particular to what is important to my spouse, my partner. And I think thinking about that, what are the things that my partner would appreciate? And, having that discussion. So this way, because that also sometimes like can also be overlooked. It's like anything that I do for them, it's like, no, let's really look at the specifics. That's going to really make the difference in terms of, feeling loved by your partner.
Yeah, it seems that nowadays so many people are just pulled in so many directions and so busy, and quality time is just one that's so challenging to come by. But I guess of any of them, of any of the five, I would have thought that quality time, in a sense, is like the most universal. You know, kind of like everyone's gonna have. I would think everyone's gonna have quality time, and like might not be their number one, but it's gonna have to be there, you know, in some significant way.
That for sure. If not, then like, how are you going to build your relationship or keep your relationship? So I think that is true. Like in today's times, if there's so much distraction, it's so necessary. People are working many hours, and I think that is really important. But the thing with quality time also that I think is often overlooked, it's sometimes it's not just about sitting on the couch together and maybe it's watching something or listening to a podcast or whatever it is. It's undivided attention, which we have our phones all the time, we're on it. So with quality time, it's very important that you're keeping your focus, it's undivided. So that's something also people don't necessarily think about. And it's also that during this time, the quality of your conversation is very important. So, this is where people who really appreciate this love language, it's very important that in these conversations, there's self-revelation, where you're sharing with your partner what you're thinking, what you're feeling. It's both ways, meaning you want to do that, but you also want your partner to do that to you, to have them talk about their thoughts, show empathy, feelings, what's going on with them. So I think that's also something that's important to really think about when you're spending quality time. It's because we think about it generally, okay, it's sharing experiences together. But it's also the quality of conversation that's also important during these times.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the insight you had earlier about how whatever the love language is in the positive sense also is an indicator to what the other side of the coin would be. And so if quality time is about the undivided attention, then I would imagine that someone whose love language is quality time is going to be extremely sensitive to experiencing time together in which they feel like they're not getting the undivided attention. And so, and everyone's sensitive to that, but the people who fall into that category will be have a heightened sensitivity to that. So, like you were saying before about words of affirmation, those people will have a heightened sensitivity to, you know, something negative in the tone of voice, something nagging in the articulation and or in the word choice. And the quality time people will have that heightened sensitivity to feeling like, why are you glancing at your phone while we're supposed to be, you know, spending this time together? Or why are you willing to spend so much time talking to the friend who walks by our table at the restaurant when we're supposed to be out having dinner together, etc.
It's
Yeah. And then I
definitely.
guess the acts of service person would probably have that. The flip side for them would be feeling forgotten or feeling, you know, untaken care of. Yeah, so it really kind of directs us, guides us as a spouse into, you know, what things to be, not only in terms of filling our spouse, you know, filling them up in a positive way, but also what to really be careful about.
And really, I think it's about each of these are dialects, right? The way that we show love and receive love, the same way if you spoke a certain language, it's about finding each other's language, right? And if you speak English to somebody who speaks French, you're not gonna understand each other. So
Right.
yes, it's about each dialect, but it's also within each dialect there's a dialect. So let's say with physical touch, getting to know your partner, what to them they appreciate. Do they appreciate a tap on your shoulder when you're walking by in the kitchen? So it's, or maybe they don't. They feel like, what are you doing? So I think that it's very much within these love languages is also really fine-tuning and understanding what's the dialect within this dialect. That's really, really important. And that's really what I found when I was like rereading this book and reading your chapter. It made me really think about, these small things that we don't necessarily think about.
Yeah. So I think part of the love language concept is also the concept of kind of individuality, you know, is getting to know yourself and kind of embracing and being comfortable to to explore and to figure out what works for you, and kind of giving yourself permission essentially to not necessarily just fall into whatever is scripted or whatever seems to be the cultural norm or the communal expectation, but to allow yourself to figure out what actually works for you. And I think that's true both in the love languages in the context of interpersonal relationships, then also if we start branching out now into the spiritual love languages, especially to be able to say, well, what actually inspires me? What actually, gets me involved, gets me engaged, et cetera, and not just fitting into the kind of conveyor belt expectations. So I'm curious from your perspective, what are the things that, make it challenging for people to be able to find their individuality and their unique path, their unique relationships, both with other people and with God? And the corollary to that being, how do we start to do that, better if we struggle with that?
I think that there's many factors that really lead to finding what speaks to us in terms of connecting to, spiritually connecting to, God and people. I think there's many things. I think it has a lot to do with modeling of our own parents, how they expressed love to each other, how they expressed love to us. That will influence that. If there is trauma or neglect, people who have experienced neglect will really not, I think, you wrote about this in the chapter, was they won't believe that God actually cares about them. So to them, davening and praying is something that they're like, no, why would God care or listen to me? Because they're so not used to that. So our experiences really impact the way we give and receive love. I think it's also temperament or personality, right? You can have many people that grow up in the same family and express and receive love and connect to spirituality differently. So that we can't, the temperament plays a role. Are you a feeler, a thinker? What are you, an artist? Are you very logical? So I think, all these things are going to impact. I think shame, feeling unworthy, will often get in the way of just feeling like I don't deserve love, or they don't feel comfortable with receiving love. So that definitely, these things can really, really impact the way you receive, or even, people have gone through trauma or really negative experiences will often really have a hard time connecting spiritually because they really believe that, God doesn't love them. If they had parents where they couldn't connect to and didn't have a relationship with, then they are going to then basically reflect that relationship onto God. That's why some people, you often see that people who struggle with addictions or have a lot of trauma have a very hard time being connecting to spirituality, which is why often part of the healing is very much about spirituality, right? Even in AA, right? There's always a higher power, right? It's always part of the healing process, because that's how it's very important, our relationship with God and with people. And we are going to reflect that relationship of whatever our experiences were with our parents. We're going to reflect that onto God. So I think these are things that often get in the way. And once you start healing, that's when really you're able to spiritually connect, because you're no longer cut off from yourself. I think also if you need to feel connected to yourself in order to give and receive love, you need to be connected to yourself. You need to know what are my desires? What do I feel? Right? Intimacy is about sharing your feelings and your thoughts with another person. But the first step is knowing what your thoughts and feelings are. So you really need to be connected to yourself. So again, if you went through things where you're very disconnected from yourself because of experiences that happened to you, or because you had to disconnect from your own feelings because of things that have happened to you, trauma or your past or your environment, or maybe it was learned behavior, your parents didn't allow you to express yourself. It was very much not reinforced. So therefore, you're going to have a hard time, let's say, with words of affirmation, or even quality time, being able to express how you feel and think, because that was not something that was modeled for you. It was actually shut down. So these are things that are really going to impact the way you connect with God and with, you know, other people. And we could go into each one, you know. It was really fascinating the way that you broke down the spiritual love languages. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about or anything else. Throw it out there.
Yeah, no, I'd love to hear. Would love to hear your thoughts on that, on how on translating this into the spiritual version of these love languages.
Okay, it was interesting, you know. So when I was going through them, and maybe I obviously was thinking about, okay, which ones do I connect to? And obviously, there's so many more. But I thought it was interesting when you the spiritual love language of words of affirmation was davening, praying, or even talking to God in your own words, or the idea of a spodinus, right? You're going, so that I thought was just interesting, a way of, you know, how some people connect to that, some people don't. And I think, again, the reason why some people don't is because they really believe that if they didn't have parents that listened to them, or there was neglect or abuse, it's very likely that this one, that's not going to talk to them, because they're like, why would God, why is he listening? Like, why would he care? You know, because again, we attribute our relation with our parents, we connect that with God. So that was interesting. And, quality of time. I thought that was very interesting also. You said, you spoke about that the holidays, the Yom Tovim, is very much, that's another spiritual love language of quality time, which makes a lot of sense, you know, especially because during those times we're putting away our phones, we're disconnecting, and then it's really about connecting to God. So that I thought was very interesting. I happen to really like that one. I think we all do in today's day and age.
Yeah. So I guess one of the questions I have is, you know, there's definitely, all the factors you just said, I find to also be so true, right? If there's deeper rooted kind of disconnect from the self, or certainly trauma and shame, a person who didn't have a nurturing upbringing which reinforced, you know, the idea or the possibility of being in tune and having permission to feel what I'm feeling and think what I'm thinking and express what I'd like to express, etc. So when any of those kind of deeper issues are present, deeper challenges are present, for sure there's going to be a more difficult time accessing that individualized path.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say even when we don't have those kind of deeper trauma, shame, etc., I think there's still a challenge, because we live in a culture, I think, and I don't think this is unique to the Frum community. It's just the Frum community has its own unique version of this. And even within the Frum community, yeah. I mean, there's so many different pockets of what that means, where there's a certain path, you know, there's certain things that are kind of the expectations and the norms, and mm-hmm. like, this is how, you know, this is how a successful, guy or girl grows up, and this is how it goes. This is how it looks to be from, to be engaged, etc. And so that, I think, is a challenge, even if there aren't, you know, the deeper underlying issues.
Right.
I think,
true.
Meaning for sure, that issue that I'm naming, which is more of the cultural issue, will be amplified a lot more when there are the deeper challenges. But even without the deeper challenges, I think those kind of communal cultural challenges are present. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts on how a person, again, even if we're not getting into the deeper layer of stuff, because that's more something that a person would need, you know, more individual psychotherapy to try and work through. But I think all of us, you know, everyone, I mean, we all also have those deeper issues, but, you know, but all of us are, you know, are living with that cultural challenge.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I think there's definitely perceived like notions and ways that when we grow up, we're very much taught that this is what it means to be Jewish. This is what it means to be spiritual. And then if you can't connect to those things, I think a lot of time people like really then like then think very black and white sometimes. And I'm like, I can't connect to Judaism, you know, or we're not even that. And I'm not saying it's that extreme with people, but I think that there's very much certain things that since we're young, we're taught and we're told that these are the things you need to do to be, that means that you're a firm Jew. And that we lose a lot of times that emotional piece because it's something that we're just doing automatically. And then we don't think about, okay, what are the ways that I really connect? You know, because like, I know it says you wrote in your chapter, you spoke about how the Rambam says that every person has like a mitzvah that they're meant to like perform perfectly or well. And I think that's, it's so true because a lot of times we don't think in those terms of like, what do I enjoy? What brings me closer to Hashem? What brings me, we don't think of that because a lot of us have grown up since we were young, just doing things by habit because this is what we were taught in school or this is what my parents told us. That we're not doing it from a place so much of love or desire or what I enjoy. But really, I think it's such a great way to think about this is what do I enjoy? What fills me up? Is it when I give, you know, tzedakah? Is it when I prepare a beautiful meal for Yontev or when I bake challah or maybe if the man is davening or, you know, but we each, just like we each have desires and preferences with foods and taste and aesthetics and with hobbies and interests, the same thing it's going to be with spirituality. So I think it's like starting to really think in terms of that. What fills me up? What do I enjoy? Back to what you were saying about what was you were saying before about you started this with saying how why is it, oh, not, you don't necessarily have to have trauma, right, to be disconnected, but I think
Right.
it's a lot about just habit and rote and not thinking about like what do I enjoy, or this is what I have to do. So then, because you have to do it, you're not you're feeling forced, and it becomes something that you must do as opposed to that you want to do. But really, there's so much place for individuality, and really finding the things that really really fill you up in Judaism. And but we don't think in terms of that because we're taught a lot out of fear. You must do this, or something terrible is going to happen. You're going to burn in hell or whatever we were taught. So I think there's a lot of, I do think that in Hasidus, right? And I think they're really changing that is about love. It's a lot about love, right? Fine, as opposed to fear. So I think that has a lot of, that's a big impact because I think a lot of us were taught like you do this, if you don't do this, so, you know, something bad's going to happen. So I think that also, that perspective could really, really change things.
It's interesting. I think it's true in both in marriages and in relationships, and then also in this context of spirituality and religion, that when a person is feeling upset about their circumstance or unhappy or unsatisfied in the relationship, again, whether it's with a person or with Hashem, the natural thought is to think about how this person, my spouse or my friend or my family member, is lacking in X, Y, or Z, or they are not able to do this or this, or whatever issues, whatever complaints, whatever criticisms I have of that person. And then similarly in Judaism, so it's if I'm feeling uninspired, disinterested,
Right.
it's not working for me, I'm thinking Judaism is not for me, Judaism is not speaking to me, I don't like this, et cetera. Versus what you're saying is, again, in both contexts, the interpersonal relationships and then with God, it's thinking about, instead of the criticism or the evaluation of the other, it's what do I want? What does hit home for me? What does inspire me or bring light or make things alive for me? And then when I know the answer to that, it's okay, how can I find that in this relationship? So how can I communicate that to my spouse, friend, family member? How can I bring that out in this context? And then similarly in Judaism, it's okay, if I know what actually does speak to me, where can I find that in Judaism? Because there is so much out there. There's such a range and a variety of ways that we can experience Judaism and that we can experience other people, even the very same person, we can have different experiences with them. So if instead of thinking about the other and what's wrong with the other, we think
True.
about what do I need, what do I want, and then I can actually find that in the context of the other, which on the surface can sound or look almost a little bit like self-centered because I'm thinking so much about myself, but it's the opposite, because when I have that clarity of what I actually want, instead of just thinking about criticizing them, then I can actually give them the ability to you know, I can actually connect with them better.
It's true. And also, you know, what's interesting, like a lot of times people will say, I can't connect with, let's say, keeping kosher, you know, with not eating milk and meat together or fasting in Yom Kippur. And then they think those things are not important. But really, in every relationship, doing things that we don't enjoy is part of the relationship. Like what you spoke about was that acts of service and gifts, we can think of those things that we don't find inspiring and meaningful in Judaism. We could think of those things as acts of service to God and gifts to God. So therefore, even if you're saying, oh, but I don't connect with this part, you hear people like, I don't connect with certain things, I'm not going to follow these things. And really, but if you look at it in a way of, no, this is part of the relationship. Sometimes doing things that are uninspiring and don't feel meaningful to me is actually part of the relationship, because that's an act of service. That's a gift. And I really thought that also was really helpful, especially today. We live in a society where it's so much about seeking inspiration and finding meaning that we sometimes lose that importance of, no, guess what? Not everything is meaningful. It's I don't enjoy, you know, cleaning up, you know, picking up my husband's socks if he left it on the floor, or doing laundry. But it's something that I do because it's part of a relationship, or I know that this will mean a lot to him, even though I don't enjoy it. So I'm therefore going to do this for him. Same thing with God, you know? So I think that sometimes people also, like, we don't want to lose both. Yes, at the same time, we want to find the things that are meaningful to us and do those things that are inspiring to us, and really finding that love language and spirituality. And at the same time, all love languages are all important in every relationship, right? We can't forget, they're all important. It's just about what's most important. So the same thing with Judaism. It's not about now suddenly, okay, I don't find this inspiring or meaningful, therefore I'm not going to do it. No, actually that's an act of service or gift to God, which I thought was really, really powerful, you know, when he wrote that in the chapter.
Yeah, I think it's so important, and is one of the reasons why I like the framing of the love languages, because the idea of love languages is that it's really about knowing my spouse's love language and being able to connect in that way, even when that's not what I find meaningful. And then vice versa, the same has to be true for me as well.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what would you say, let's say we, because I think this comes up all the time, you have someone who let's make up an example. Let's say their husband's love language is acts of service. And like you said before, right? So that can mean different things for different people. So let's say this, I'll give a real example. Okay. So there was a couple I worked with, and this is a few years ago, and the wife, her love language was acts of service. And it was specifically things that were, at least on surface level, more mundane. They weren't like overtly, you know, the types of things you think of as like romantic or loving. So it was like filling up her car with gas would be like something that she would feel really taken care of, really seen, etc. And for him, he was, what is that? You can relate to that.
Yeah.
And for him, and he was...
Then, you know, that's where the anger could, no, go on.
and he was like much more of the kind of, I don't know, call it like the poetic soul, artistic soul, and, you know, much more of a romantic. And he just could not understand like how that was love.
Right.
And it made it very hard for him, because he, for himself, like he wanted to, you know, I don't know, give her cards and flowers and whatever else it was. And that really didn't speak to her, you know, and these more kind of technical things spoke to her a lot more. So what would you say to a spouse in that situation? Because what you were saying before, I think is so important, like not everything needs to be meaningful, but it can still be, it's still challenging, like for a long-term relationship to be in that position.
Yeah. It is, but I think that that's what relationships are about. It's really finding what's meaningful to them. So in that situation, you buying flowers might be more for yourself, you know? It would be. I would say I would have them recognize and realize that, no, this to them is their love language. And this is how she's going to receive love. So therefore, yes, go fill up, do the mundane things, fill up the car. And of course everyone does appreciate a nice bouquet of flowers. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing those things. And you could do those things as well. Of course, those things enhance a relationship. Having a beautiful dinner with lit candles, of course those things enhance, but it's what's going to really fill her up is doing the mundane things. So yes, continue to be romantic. Of course, that's going to enhance a relationship, but make sure that you're actually really doing those mundane things for her, like filling up the gas in her car, because that's how she interprets love. That's her dialect. That's her language. So I would say you can still be yourself and do those things. Because again, I think that's where often people get so caught up. It's, oh, I don't believe, I was once having this conversation with someone. Oh, the love languages, I don't believe in it. They're all important to me. Of course, they're all important. We need all these things in a relationship. Can you imagine if you stopped doing things for your partner and you only just did words of affirmation? And you stopped taking care of things? Your partner's gonna start to get angry. So, of course, they're all important, but it's looking at what's the most important? What's gonna really, really speak to me the most? And people usually have one or two that speak the most, but again, all of them are important. So I think continue to be that artist, should be continue being that artist, but also just think about your partner, and make sure you're actually also doing the things that really speak to them.
Do you think that part of the work for this couple includes, let's say in the example I gave, includes the wife trying to cultivate more of a ability to receive that romantic, those romantic, more rom again, I'm just using this term, those romantic gestures, and to allow that to be to work towards allowing that to be also a love language that becomes more highlighted, or that's really not what the work is about. It's really about him understanding that when he's trying to express love to her, it's not about him, it's about her. And so he
Right.
really needs to focus on, on the mundane things.
I think that, yeah, I think that a big part of the work where she'll interpret love is about the mundane things, but I also think that her working on receiving and accepting is for sure part of the relationship because it's so important to him. And also learning to appreciate that, like, oh wow, that is, because you can really learn to appreciate things about people. I often personally will appreciate things that are different than me. So if that's not, so that's just me personally. Oh wow, that's so interesting that this is what you do, because I appreciate differences, but it makes it more interesting. But that's just me. But I'm saying, yeah, I definitely think that in relationships, part of the work is accepting things in general that are different than us and learning to appreciate those differences. So yeah, I would say so. But in terms of her really receiving love and feeling loved, in terms of that context, him focusing on the mundane is very important. But in terms of the relationship as a whole, it is very important that she does learn to accept this part of him and appreciate it.
Yeah, so it would really be kind of that there's a whole it the love language piece turns into a whole rounded it surrounds the whole relationship on both sides in terms of working on how to show up in a way that I'm giving in the way that my spouse actually needs. And then also it's kind of counterintuitive, but it's how do I show up to be able to receive in a way that my spouse needs to give, which paradoxically is like a it's a receiving that's actually in a sense a form of giving as well. Because if I can really allow myself to receive this gift from you, I'm actually giving you the ability to give a gift in the way that you like to give, which means something to you.
Yeah,
And
that's
so then,
beautiful.
which is really beautiful because it all becomes kind of harmonious then, right? Like it's reciprocal. My receiving is giving, and your giving is
Yeah,
receiving.
that will for sure impact the relationship. Yeah, I like that way of looking at it. That receiving is really giving. If you can receive, it's actually something in his way of giving that's giving. Yeah.
I guess that's kind of the that classic insight people have about the word giving in Hebrew is natan, which is a palindrome, right? So it
Right.
spells the same way back, right? I guess that's
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
that classic kind of that classic idea.
That defines that really well. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a really interesting conversation. Definitely added a lot that I had never thought about in terms of the love languages, like which we started as is like such a classic idea, but you brought so much nuance to it that I had not previously thought about. Thank you for making the time to do this with me.
Sure. And thank you. It's been a pleasure being on here. And I will look forward to reading the rest of your book.
Thank you.
Okay.
Take
Take
care.
care. Bye-bye.
So much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please follow us on WhatsApp, YouTube, or Instagram. All our podcast series can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with questions, comments, or suggestions, or to be added to our WhatsApp groups. You can reach us through email using yakov.attached@gmail.com or on WhatsApp at 773-888-2413.